Hi, I'm Claire Edwards, and I'm the percussionist and artistic director of Sydney's new music group, Ensemble Offspring. The Offcast is a new podcast from Ensemble Offspring, where I'll be chatting to the musical mavericks, the pioneers, the ones who were often perceived as the outcasts in the world of classical music as they grew and blossomed. But as professionals, it is these people who are the innovators and the ones who are creating much needed change and diversity for our musical landscape. So today I'm speaking to Eliza Shepherd, who will be Ensemble Offspring's Hatched Academy Associate Artist in 2022. We're very excited to welcome her into this position. Hopefully she has time to work with us because she was recently she recently became a finalist in the Young Performers Award. She's a finalist in the Friedman Fellowship. And you have lots of other work as well. You're very going very well and
going through
a little purple patch, as they say. So anyway, welcome to the Ensemble Offspring family. Just thought maybe you'd like to start, Eliza, just with a bit of context, I guess, about how you came to be in this position today.
Yeah, sure. Well, first off, obviously, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to not only be joining the Ensemble Offspring family, but also just getting to chat with you today. It feels like forever since speaking with other humans, so it's really rewarding and special to
you. Just got out of lockdown, didn't you?
We did.
That's amazing.
It's pretty exciting and very special. So yeah, a little bit about me. I'm a regional Australian, well, New South Wales girl. I was born in Wagga Wagga. I'm from a family of five kids. I'm the second eldest, so I'm in the position where, you know, I think I've got power, but I don't actually, so it's pretty good. No responsibilities in the second role.
You know, I'll just tell you, Jason Noble, who's from Port Macquarie, a clarinet mm-hmm. player, he has a family of 10 children.
Oh, my
goodness. And he's the second oldest as well. I think, or he might be the oldest. I can't remember, but anyway, he's right at the top.
That's awesome. Oh, we can bond about being the second eldest.
You can.
If he's also there. I was from a musical family. My dad's a composer, a jazz pianist, one of those like multi-instrumentalists, always supported us.
Did he make his living that way in Wagga Wagga?
He's had a bit of a crazy past. So he started out, he went to Sydney Con to train as a composer, but he was also working a lot with television and was doing a lot of work with various stations and has written a lot of jingles for them. But in the end, he had to make the decision between composition working with television. So he went the television route, and his father was also a stonemason. So then he got roped into becoming a stonemason and working in the stonemasonry business, which in a weird way, I think I love it that most of my childhood was spent, you know, running around cemeteries and yeah. helping out around the house in the, you know, looking after or finding cool bits of stone and helping with the gilding and gold leaf. It was everywhere in my childhood. And so he was a stonemason for a while, and then he went and said, I need a change of scenery. He was doing music the whole time, just more of as a side project with a family friend, David Kennedy, and a couple of other local musicians in Wagga. And I got roped into a couple of them. I think I was the youngest person to play in the Wagga Wagga Jazz and Blues Festival when I was 12. So that was pretty cool. But he sold the stonemasonry business when my grandfather died, and he thought I needed something different, so he went and became a psychologist. He's done a bit of everything, and again, music is really ingrained in him, and with his psychology he often will write music and create because it's with his clients, because it's such a safe firstly it's a safe space obviously, but it gets them really thinking outside the box and opening up. So it's really special, and I'm really glad to have that connection with you.
And do your parents still live in Wagga Wagga?
They do, yes.
Oh, wow.
So heading back there is really wonderful.
You know, we went to Wagga Wagga just before this latest lockdown with the surge.
No way.
And we didn't actually play there. We would still really like to play there, play this program there. But we stayed there on our way to Deniliquin.
Mm-hmm.
because it was quite a big drive from Canberra to Deniliquin.
I can't even remember.
And so we stayed in Wagga Wagga. And I had been there a couple of times before. We had played there with Ensemble Offspring, but I was amazed at just how cosmopolitan the city had become in like the last kind of 10 years. And we went to like this really cool little bar and like a wine bar. And then we went to this really very cute little hole in the wall. I think it was a Lebanese restaurant run by this lady, and we were the only people who could fit in there, and it was so special. Like I thought I could live here.
It's wild. Like I remember when I was 10, you know, walking around and going, oh, there's nothing to do. You know, you go to the movies. Whereas nowadays you go there and there's so much. It's really opened up in terms of just opportunities and possibilities for a night out or a day out. Or it's weird going back because I'm like,
I can imagine.
Everything's so different. But yeah, it's a beautiful little town, and I do really enjoy going back. But yeah, it is. I got to keep reminding myself it is still Wagga, even though. Everything has changed. It's gotten a lot bigger since I was there. I haven't lived there since I was 15, I think, late 15.
Oh, wow. So why did you leave when you were that young?
I got booted off to boarding school.
Woo-hoo. Did you?
Oh, yeah. So I went to Canberra Girls Grammar School for years 11 and 12, and I'm so glad I did because it really helped, like, and especially coming from a family of five, you know, and lots of big personalities with all five of us, it was very rewarding to, like, I got the performing arts scholarship and the boarding scholarship. So, because I remember I was quite grumpy that I had to go and I had to leave all my friends, you know, I was a classic teenager. Yeah. And so I told my parents, you know, I will only go if I get both of the scholarships, sort of thinking, you know, this will never happen.
Yeah.
So obviously that was my plan was foiled, but like in the end it was the most incredible experience. You know, women can be so supportive, and I like I've always had like male friends, and so being really close to a lot of girls, it was a lot of fun to really explore that more creative, dare I say, feminine side, while studying there. And I was obviously studying with some very fine flute teachers. I'd met Virginia Taylor when I was 12. She came to Wagga to do a Woodwinds Out West weekend. Wow.
Oh, wow.
and she sort of took me under her wing, and I, from like that, around the age of 14, I think I started heading up to Canberra every 6 weeks or so. And
yeah,
doing
so it
a
made
little,
sense to
So she actually said go to Canberra Girls Grammar School because Teresa Rabe, who's an incredible pocket rocket of energy and just a brilliant flute player, teaches at that school. And Virginia's has passed a couple of her students to her prior to doing tertiary study with Virginia.
Uh-huh.
So Teresa really gave me this amazing foundation, basically reworked my technique and just gave me this lift ready to study full time with Virginia in university, I guess. So 2011. No, 2012. That's when I was into the uni world.
What uni did you go to then?
I went to ANU. So which was – so I'd already – with my time coming over to see Virginia when I was, 14, 15.
Yeah.
She actually let me sit in on the, you know, the big kids flute class, which was so incredible because, you know, I was getting to watch people like Lena Andonovska, David Shaw, just blast out these incredible, studies. And it would be in Virginia's class at that time. You'd had to learn a new study every single week and you had to perform it in the flute class. And so for, you know – every 6 weeks I'd hear these incredible flute players just whipping out these etudes, and I'm just sitting there going, and they're all different, but they're so supportive and they're this hilarious unit of energy and, you know, friendliness. They were just so like happy to have this random 15-year-old sitting there, just sitting in awe of and watching them play. So that was a real defining moment that to see what could be possible for me in my future. And then obviously Girls Grammar happened and I was even closer to the flute class, and then getting to study with her, I ended up studying with Virginia for about 7 years.
Wow.
So, yeah. Which was amazing. Like getting to develop a relationship over a long time with a teacher, and because she got to see me obviously as a young girl, but then to grow up into the musician I am today, like we'll still have regular chats and catch up, and it's she's like a second mum. It's so wonderful.
Yeah, she's lovely. Virginia's in Brisbane now, isn't she?
She is. She
yeah.
is.
So oh, it feels. Yeah. I think she taught Lamorna as well.
Yeah. She's
also
yeah.
at ANU.
She's taught so many of Australia's greatest flute players. It's
but obviously,
wild.
Since you left, that's when the department kind of well. Decimated yeah. is a big word, but
well, they announced the changes at the end of my first semester at ANU.
Ooh.
So Virginia and I actually we put our heads together and we're like, "What are we going to do? How are we going to make this work?" And she was incredible and said, "Look, we're going to get through this together, and then we'll both head on our way after
yeah.
this." So she really just said, "Ignore what's going on. Let's really focus on your skills and your training," which was really special to have someone really care so much about all of their students. But yeah, she was really. I wouldn't be the flute player I am today without her support from that horrible time.
Yeah,
I really escaped into the world of musical theatre during that time. Much to her dismay. She came along to a lot of shows, so can't have been that bad. But it was really wonderful to both have that creative outlet when, you know, the world of my training was sort of collapsing aside from the beam of light coming from Virginia. So that was, it's a bit of a bumpy start in my tertiary training.
Well, yes, that's the issue with universities these days, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So then you went on to continue to study with Virginia at ANAM, mm-hmm. yeah?
Yeah. I did disappear to New York for about 5 months in the end of 2015. So I studied with Robert Dick, who's, known as the father of extended techniques. He's got the most incredible set of ears. He can just hear every micro fiber of a sound. It was incredible to study with him. And I was in a class of seven. I was the only Aussie, woohoo, which was kind of cool, but very weird when you sort of think, oh, I got to speak with a slight twang because my Australian accent can't be understood.
That was like me in Holland, the same thing. Like I couldn't keep it quite as broad. So when I came back, I think I spoke much more clearly.
Yeah, I didn't realise how differently I had to change my speaking, because when I came back, all my family's speaking with these really broad, bogany accents.
Yeah, country accents.
Yeah, country accents. Well, compared to the New York sounds that I was hearing. Went away, and actually I was away for, because with the year not aligning with ours, I actually missed, in a way, my final uni recital at ANU. So I ended up doing that in February, the day before I moved down to ANAM, which was quite weird, February 2016, sorry. So it was a bit of a whirlwind, and Virginia hadn't heard me after coming. The last time she'd heard me play was late August, I think, when I'd had my final lesson, then headed over to New York, learned all these new skills, and then said, "By the way, I'm playing this. Enjoy." So it
fine.
Was
that's how
it was
should
pretty
be.
Special. Yeah, it was really special just to go, "You haven't heard me in this long, I can't wait to hear what you think." So
it was,
and then getting to work with her in ANAM was, it's a whole different level, and you're surrounded by the finest young Australian musicians, and it's just like this amazing potluck of, okay, we can go have, we can play this with this person because they're really keen on that, or we could try this with, because you're always going to find someone in a community like that is so keen to collaborate or to explore X, Y, or Z different areas. So it's really special to be in a place like that.
Yeah. Well, what would you say is your biggest highlight from your time at ANAM? Could you even choose one thing?
Boy, no, I don't know. I don't think so. There's highlights for my more classic training, like getting to play Brahms 4 with Richard Tognetti. That was amazingly rewarding and And like Simone Young was just, every time she was there, I was just, you know, jaw to the floor. I loved one of my recitals. I did a recital called The Storyteller, where I played all these works that had a story really strongly connected to them. And I got to collaborate with a contortionist, which was amazing.
Wow.
Brooke Duckworth, she was just absolutely incredible. And she learnt by ear Takamitsu's voice, and which is hard for just for a regular musician, but to come from this circus background and me go, okay, we created this new language, where I'd be like, yep, blop, 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 and a hop. And so she'd know, oh yeah, so that's 1, 2, 3, and a hop. Okay. So being able to speak this language, and like, I've come from a dance background, so it was really amazing for me and so special to be able to watch someone go back through and really work quite collaboratively on that and make suggestions. Obviously not overstepping my boundaries. She's obviously much more trained than I, but it was just so special to work with just a professional in her field and just an absolute wonderful human. So I look forward to our next collaboration with her.
Yeah, that sounds super cool. Was there a time where you just sort of where you thought consciously, oh, you know, maybe I don't want a job in an orchestra? I mean, did you go to Annam thinking that's what you were sort of preparing to do, and did you come out of Annam kind of going, maybe that's not me? Or was it not that kind of...
Not at all. So actually, I've actually known I don't want to be an orchestral player like full time for a very long time. Don't get me wrong, absolutely the most incredible feeling to be standing in an orchestra, well, sitting in an orchestra, and just having a wonderful time playing with top quality musicians who just all want to be there. It's just so special. But I remember I had a conversation with, someone, one of my first weeks of Annam, and we're all talking about, you know, why you're here, what you're doing, blah, blah, blah. And I said, look, I really want to be like soloist, chamber, small ensemble sort of work. I really love that. And I remember someone saying, oh, why are you here? This is an orchestral training institute. And I'm like, nah, obviously it's training you to be, so you can sit in an orchestra, but it's training you to be so well-rounded and able to adapt to anything. Or say, and I teach my students this, you know, I want to be a flute player who can say, yes, I can do that. Hopefully I've already got those skills. I try to insert myself into as many different music styles and sound worlds in my own practice, so I can go, okay, if someone needed a bit more of a this sounding flute or a that sounding flute, I can provide as best as I can. You know, you never stop learning, so I'll always keep finding things.
Do you have one of those glissando head joints?
I do.
I so, always wish Lamorna had one. So can you tell us how they work?
Yeah, so essentially it's, think of it as two tubes, one slightly smaller than the other. And the one slightly smaller will sit inside the bigger tube, and it has two wings attached to it, like little rods that sit on your cheeks. They're meant to sit comfortably, but depends on the day. Sometimes they feel great, sometimes they're a little bit annoying. But they're meant to sit there, and they're not meant to clasp onto your face. And then using the natural pressure of your bottom lip, you can actually guide that smaller tube up and down the bigger tube to change the pitch. There, depending on the note, you'll get a bigger slide. But I generally, the biggest slide you can sort of get is around a major third, perfect fourth, that sort of. So it's not a huge slide opportunity. Like, we're no trombone, but we're definitely able to get more of that bend than what we're able to get currently with our open holes, because currently open holes, you can really only get a slide sort of semitone, maybe a tone if you're also working with embouchure. It's a pretty wild contraption.
And there's quite a bit of repertoire that's been created for the glissando head joint in the last few years, isn't there?
Yeah, so I actually did my master's on the glissando head joint and exploring and expanding the repertoire. I had a particular focus on expanding exercises for, starting out glissando head joint owners, because actually there's a lot of the repertoire, you're exactly right, there's a lot of repertoire for it, but sometimes it can be a bit more focused at advanced players, whereas this is a new contraption where flute is actually quite a static instrument. We, aside from our fingers, nothing really moves. So we're no violinist, we're not moving our arms, so actually working with this contraption where you do have to push and pull a little bit with your arms, I wanted to really focus on creating exercises that and basic pieces that people can play and approach in a range of different styles as well, to get used to this contraption before going to some of the existing repertoire.
And did you publish that, or
it has been published? I haven't I found it, but I haven't reread it because I'm like, you know, it's too soon.
Oh no, but you need to get it out in the public domain so everyone can benefit. That, like my Australian Marimba composition kit, which I did not do for a master's or a doctorate, but Lisa Lim was saying that maybe I should, but I don't think I could bring myself to do it because it was really hard. And the same thing, I was like, oh God, I don't think I ever want to look at this again. And I just thought, I'm putting it out there.
So
I'm just, it's out I think there I need now to do and that. People, I think you should, yeah. Because, you know, we can always make another edition later on once we get all the various feedback over the years. And
yeah, and I think it's great. Like, the more you grow, the more you see things different ways. So, you know, I look back at it now and, like, when I have peeked at it and I've gone, I could have rewritten that sentence and it would have been 10 times better. But, you know, it's as you say, I can always put out another edition.
You can. So yes, the glissando head joint sounds amazing. And we were actually talking the other day about some programming ideas for Sizzle and a few concerts that you're doing with us next year. And I think we might have settled on one piece that actually uses the glissando head joint. So hopefully people will be able to hear that at Sizzle next year. But another piece that I was enamored by was a little piece that hopefully you'll expand on it slightly, but a piece that you wrote which involves beatboxing, like, while you're actually playing the flute.
Well, yeah, so the piece that I've, a piece that I've written, Don't Knock, Smash, has got a little bit of beatbox, and that was inspired by Greg Petillo's work, Three Pieces for Beatbox Flute, and that piece, I picked it up just as another little challenge to myself. You know, I've seen other people learning it, and I was like, I could do this, bring it on. And I got to study with Greg Petillo for a masterclass in New York, which was awesome. He's such a cool dude.
Yeah, I watched a video of him playing that piece the other day. He's so
cool.
I just don't understand beatboxing. Like, how do they make all those sounds? It's really amazing.
Well, it's given me a lot more awareness of things like articulation. You know, one thing leads to another. And so it's made me start thinking about, with Don't Knock, Smash, which was commissioned for the Key Change, MSO's Key Change panel discussion at the start of this year. God, it feels like forever ago. They wanted something that was, you know, under 2 minutes, Australian, female if possible, funky, all this. And I'm going, I don't know if anything like that exists. That I already know. I think this was on the Friday and the presentation was on Tuesday sort of thing. So I was like, Don't Knock, Smash actually came from that, and I thought, you know, it's cool to showcase the glissando head joint, and also with the beatboxing, it's something, you know, I'm still working on it, and there's times where I go, yeah, I've really got to pick this up but it's, you know, it's been great with kids. Like, a lot of my students just love the sounds that it can create, and it's, you know, nothing more fun than just, you know, we're playing flute but let's have a bit of fun, we don't have to be serious now. But yeah, it was getting the idea of inhaling and exhaling, so you can have the k as an exhale or k as an inhale, and having those two different sounds and fluctuate. Oh, it was weird because, you know, we're always trained to have quiet breaths, and then all of a sudden you're going, it's got to be like a big suck in. It's like, oh, so it's really good fun, and I'm looking forward to hopefully playing that next year with Hatched Academy.
There's something I think innately cool about beatboxing combined with flute, because flute is not really a cool instrument, and it's also...
Hey, now.
Not traditionally so.
Not traditionally.
And it's also, you know, a melodic instrument, really, at the end of the day. And so obviously beatboxing is about rhythm and also tone color changes, you know, more extreme than you can even get on the flute. And so I think combining those two, I can see why it's really taken off.
And I think, like, Greg Petillo's, you know, such a god with beatboxing, and he came from a classically trained background and would go, he actually was saying that he went to the subway in New York, and would play his orchestral excerpts, and then he realised he'd get more dollars and more tips if he was beatboxing, and he'd done a little bit of that on the side and then joined it with the flute. He really became the flute beatboxer that we know and love today, and he's written so many arrangements of different works and lots of different pieces. So it's pretty cool, and it is taking away that myth that the flute is a bit of a dorky instrument, and we're all a bit flighty in our minds, and it's giving us some weight behind our claims of actually this is a cool instrument because we can do all these other things.
You know, I used to play the flute when I was in primary school, and I loved I got up to about grade six, and I really enjoyed, I think, yeah, just focusing on melodies and just playing one line. I was like, this is awesome. And so then eventually good. I was like, I have bored. Too many things to practice. No, yeah. I wasn't bored. I was actually in a flute quartet at school with Kevin Mann, who's the percussionist from Tycos.
Stop, that's awesome.
I know, he played the flute too. So we were both just the weirdest, like, I did not know how that ended up happening. But anyway, we had fun in this flute quartet. And good. Then I think both Kevin and I eventually just were like, okay, we've got to focus on, well, for me it was percussion and piano. Just do that.
Yeah. Well, I've always, like, I'm in awe of percussionists, and I always envy them with this huge range of instruments and sounds, and the even just the way they approach music in general. And so I've got a lot of friends who are percussionists, and I'm always like trying to get as much information, and it has really inspired, like, my improvisation, my compositions, In general, my practice, it allows me to stop thinking of the flute as an instrument and rather as a tool, as a vessel to create all these sounds, rather than just going, oh, it's meant to make beautiful sounds, which is, fabulous for orchestral, a lot of chamber work, and obviously lots of beautiful solo work. But it's helped me, like, all of the contemporary extended works that I've done have informed and bettered my classical training as well.
Well, that's the great thing, isn't it, about, as musicians, and I still don't think there's a great word for describing when you're an instrumentalist who has spent a lot of time learning your instrument, if you know what I mean, because we tend to get called classical musicians, but we're not necessarily still specializing in classical music like me and you, so it doesn't seem like the right wording to me. So anyway, we're not someone who's just picked up a guitar in the last year and is strumming chords. Obviously, like, we've spent years and years and years perfecting the craft of learning that instrument, and as a student you spend so much time really analyzing and thinking about what does my teacher want me to do? What am I aiming for here? As you say, beautiful sound, whatever, phrases, subdividing, rhythms, all the things that we need to do to become a very good musician. And at a certain point, it's so liberating to just go, okay, I can do all that stuff now. So what am I really interested in delving into? What am I, what does that mean for me as a musician? And it's such an exciting kind of place to be, I think, because the world's your oyster, and why would you, in my personal view, why would you just keep playing classical music that everyone's done a million times before? But there's so many more things out there.
Oh, I agree. And, like, I'm amazed how much, like, there's so many creative people. There's more and more people just finding their voices in both their instruments and their compositions, and people reaching for art to create this outlet for them, and especially after lockdowns and things, it's been so incredibly rewarding to look around and see, oh, that person's just started painting, how cool, and that person started writing, dubstep music, and just exploring and seeing that art is constantly all around, and people reach for art every day, so that we are at, like, it's amazing to see how much there is, and it blows my mind that we're still playing Beethoven at this time.
A year of Beethoven.
Don't get me wrong, it's fantastic repertoire, but there is all this other stuff that's come out of, you know, just 2020 alone. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. Well, that's a nice segue into asking you about March of the Women.
Yeah.
And where that little initiative came from, and also into the future, what you're planning to do with it.
Well, March of the Women, I remember it very clearly. It was Valentine's Day 2020. And I was
that was
like,
this year. No, wait, last year.
No, last year.
Like, we're in 2021. Oh, my God. It's so confusing, yes. This COVID thing.
I know. What is time?
Yeah.
It was Valentine's Day, and I'd said, I knew that International Women's Day was coming up soon. And when I was at Annam, I was actually in a all-female wind quintet, which was amazing. It was Corellia Quintet. And we got started, I think, at the start of the year 2017. We really wanted to give strength and celebrate women's voices. And that, like, women have always been a huge influence to me, you know, thinking of Virginia, thinking of Teresa. And it's so wonderful that I've had a lot of women in my life that have supported my career. So from that Corellia Quintet experience, coming into 2020, I knew that International Women's Day was just around the corner, and I was like, I don't want to just do a tokenistic, let's play a little piece by a female, woohoo. I wanted to make a little something bigger. And so I had a little think that day, and I thought, I've got lots of works by female composers that I've played over the years, from Annam recordings to solo little things that I've done. Wouldn't it be cool to do a month-long project? Because I don't do things by halves, apparently. So I was like, 31 pieces, what's that? Let's do it. Again, this was the 14th of February.
Wow.
And I was like, this will be fine. I've got these 8 pieces ready to go. That's the first week. So I've bought myself I've got 3 weeks now.
Yeah.
3 weeks to learn another 21 pieces, Eliza. Goodness me. So it was not the easiest transition. Well, realizing that, yes, I've actually got to learn these pieces.
Of them were short.
A lot of them, like, luckily, well, when I thought about it, I think on the 15th of February, day after Valentine's Day, I was like, I probably need to do something. Like, I want to make sure that I'm catering to a big audience as best as I can, that, I could send one of my students to it, or another teacher could send their students to it, and they could go, oh, I like that piece. I could play that piece. So while I've got a couple of quite intense contemporary works, advanced techniques, that sort of stuff, I also wanted to ensure that I'm giving voice to the composers who've focused on younger players or simpler melodies. Mm. And that's been really quite a great challenge for me. It obviously has brought me some down days where I can sort of relax a little bit in terms of, you know, I still want to make sure that these pieces are well performed, because, you know, there have been works for example from the AMEB books that, you know, you can only find recordings of other 8-year-olds playing it. So getting those pieces performed by, you know, a working professional, it's pretty cool. And, you know,
and were you presenting them online?
I started with like going every day, it'll be 5 p.m. check online, that sort of, and it was just on my Facebook page in the first year, but then I got my stuff sorted and I popped them up on my website.
Awesome.
And yeah, so, and I did start initially with a mix of just audio recordings and a couple of video ones as well, but then I realized, you know, I could make this even more fancy and film everyone, because I noticed the engagement would change depending if there was some material to look at or not. So I thought, let's go a little bit more with this. And it's nice to actually, especially with lockdowns and everything, it was nice to see people and to know that people would be watching this. For me, watching other things, it was nicer to actually see a human breathing and playing their instrument than just listening in.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know what your future plans are for this project, but I'll tell you what I think you should do.
Tell me. I'm ready.
I think it would be cool, and you probably already thought about this, to to kind of get some sort of International Women's Day month-long event either in Australia or around the world where lots of flute players play the repertoire.
That would be amazing.
Not just you.
Yeah, that would be really nice. I can have a bit of a break then.
Make it easier for you as well. And then lots of people are being introduced to this new music, hopefully.
Exactly. And there's this, like, I thought I had a pretty well-rounded view of different composers and knowledge of these people, but every year that I, well, I say every year, but every month, because I'll go and check, you know, Australian Music Centre, Wirrupang, Sounds in New Zealand, and just I'll check out all these resources and just see what's new. And there's always a new thing that I'm like, oh, I haven't even heard of that person, or I haven't heard of this, you know, this combination, because I do like to do some chamber works. Again, lightens the load, but also lets me, you know, play with other people, which is really nice. So it's a project that has so much space to grow. There's so much spectrum. And I'd love to, like, in the future, I'd love to commission 31 new pieces from, you know, I'm Australian. I'd love to have 31 Australian composers. I've tried to avoid double ups in terms of, you know, a composer was featured in 2020 and 2021. But there's also so many pieces where I'm like, this composer has written so much for the flute or flute and piano. It would seem silly and not the point of March of the Women to go, oh, well, I already featured you once. So I'm very open to going, wow, this person's given a lot to the flute world. So let's feature a couple of their works. It's amazing. I've had composers reach out to me saying, hey, I've heard you're doing this, got a piece for you.
Yeah, let's awesome. Do it.
And again, it will just depend on time and already planned repertoire. I think I've got enough repertoire for up to 2024 now. So,
oh my goodness.
Yes.
Have you programmed Brenda Gifford's piece Mungala?
I have. That's for next year.
Oh, okay. Because, yeah, that was written for Claire Chase, but Lamorna and I sort of took it on board to do a few things to it with Brenda. So yeah. I think that's an awesome little piece as well.
Yeah. And, like, speaking of Claire Chase, she's a powerhouse of a human. And she – I remember seeing her actually in the time that I was over in New York, and – I remember that was the first clearest moment in my mind where I sat and I went, that's what I want to do. Because she had light, sound, the works, and it didn't feel like a flute recital. And it was the first time I'd actually heard of her at that time, you know, in the lead up to it and her 2036 project, Density project. I was so in awe. I was just sitting there. I just had my jaw on the floor going, who is this person? I love them.
Yeah, she's amazing.
She's absolutely incredible and has inspired so much. So that has been a little bit of an inspiration, her Density 2036 project.
Yeah.
Just having this weight and this amazing amount, this mammoth amount of repertoire being created by one person and created and performed, commissioned, created and performed. She's really inspirational.
Did you see her, this humongous piece that Lisa Lim wrote for her?
Sex Machine? Oh, yeah.
It's like a sort of percussion flute solo thing. I don't know
it's so good.
It.
Yeah, I just sat there and was just like, this is good.
I could see you playing that.
One day.
I wonder how long she has the rights on it for, because I reckon you should play it. It's really, really, really cool.
I got to get myself a contrabass flute first.
That's true. Lamorna doesn't even have one of those. Does anyone have one in Australia?
Peter Sheridan would, but I'm not chummy enough with him yet to be like, hey, can I borrow that for 3 months?
No, well, exactly. It's almost like you have to buy one and just commit.
Yeah, I know there are a couple that, like, Flutes and Flutists have one, I believe, and Flute Tree have a couple, I think.
Oh, okay.
So there's some up in Sydney, but they're for purchase, and I don't have that kind of money.
No, because also there's do you know Ned McGowan? He's this composer and flute player
who we
have collaborated quite a lot with at Ensemble Offspring, and he's based in Amsterdam, but he plays contrabass flute. That's like the thing that he plays, and he's got a lot of other great repertoire as well, actually, for contrabass flute and percussion. I did a gig with him at Canberra International Music Festival a few years ago.
Fantastic.
And he's a great composer as well, so good one to check out.
I will definitely make sure I know him.
Yeah. He's not a woman, but, you know,
no, that's
not
okay.
Everyone can be a woman. Otherwise, the race would end.
The world would explode. We need a couple of us to keep us, a couple of men to keep us real, because we've just got so many amazing dreams and just things that we can make happen, and it's...
Yeah, and we also crap on a bit much. Like, the men are just there to just kind of, not
real
talk.
As in.
Not talk too much and just get on with it. Anyway, great chatting to you, Eliza.
You too, Claire.
And I speak for myself and the ensemble that we can't wait to work with you and collaborate with you next year.
Oh my God, I'm so excited.
It'll be really exciting to sort of introduce you to more Sydney audiences too.
Definitely, yes. That'll be a new change for me. I've done a lot of time down south, but not a whole lot up north, so I'm excited.
Yeah, well, we can't wait. So thanks for chatting, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to The Offcast with Claire Edwards. For more information on the innovative people and musical projects discussed in this episode, take a look at the show notes below. We'd love to hear from you, so please get in touch by emailing admin@ensembleoffspring.com. And if you're interested in supporting The Offcast and the important creative work we do at Ensemble Offspring, you can donate via our website. Keep listening for more conversations with musical mavericks.